listening to Nowhere in Mulberry, film, television, pop culture. It's where you find it.
Spoilers detected. Proceed with caution. Listen at your own risk.
Hey everybody, it's me, the Jaystrom, and Mulberry Bill. Hey Bill, how's it going?
Excellent.
And we are from Nowhere in Mulberry, the film, television, and pop culture podcast. But today we're here to talk about one movie. That's it, just one movie. And that movie is Super 8. Now, before we get into all that, I'd like you to go to nowhereinmulberry.com. There you can find all of our shows. You can find our forum at nimforum.com. But most of all, I'd like you to give us any kind of feedback you want. Go to 1206-202-3491 and send us a voicemail. Or send us an email at nimpodcast@gmail.com. Now, the one thing that I would love to do is maybe we get enough opinions, Bill. We could do a little feedback show on what people thought of these films. I would love for people to just tell us what they thought of the movies we talk about, like sending your opinions on X-Men, the last movie we did, or sending your opinions on Super 8 and whatever other movies we talk about. This is our second NIM movie mini, Bill, and I hope it's something we just keep going, keep rolling on. You know, whenever I see a movie, sometimes it could be we're fired up because we've seen a really bad movie, or we're really fired up because we've seen something that's really good, or sometimes we're just in a ho-hum mood after seeing a movie, you know? And the main thing is I just want this to be fun to listen to, and you and I just have a movie film discussion, film conversation. That's what it is. We're not necessarily here to review a movie. We're just here to talk about it, right?
Yes!
So let's do that, Bill, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Now, first of all, I want to talk about Super 8 before it hit theaters. Remember when we had that trailer where you just see the train coming and you're not sure what's going on? A truck is driving and it crashes into the train. There's this explosion, and it's mostly just CGI work because I don't even think they'd filmed anything yet on the movie.
No.
But you see a door spinning the handle, and then it flies off and Super 8 camera, and it's like, what the hell is this? So, you know, J.J. Abrams was at it again with his viral marketing. It gets us all worked up and excited. But honestly, I don't think anything could get me as excited as when the viral marketing with Cloverfield, which we all know that J.J. Abrams produced. He did not direct. Some people do not realize that. I see that a lot, Bill, where people are like, well, you know, in Cloverfield, it's like he did not direct it, okay? I don't even think he wrote the shit, okay?
Yeah, it was his friend Matt Reeves, right?
Matt Reeves, good buddy of his, great director in his own right. He went on to do the remake of the vampire movie,
Let the Right One In, which we called Let Me In here in the States.
Yeah, well, it's too many words for Americans, so yeah. Let Me In. Right.
Let me in, dude.
When Super 8, I was like, oh, cool. I can't wait to find out what this is. And we've heard certain things about it, like it's an homage to Spielberg and the movies that JJ grew up with. That's fine. But I didn't really get into all of the viral marketing, going to websites and assembling film clips and stuff like that. Did you?
No, I never get into that stuff. I find it asinine, and I just don't have the interest or energy to go to a website and flip through a puzzle to unlock a piece of another puzzle that
right.
you need to complete in order to get to a 30-second clip of the film when I really just want to see the film. I don't want to see a clip.
Right.
I feel that they did this a lot leading up to the release of X-Men First Class, where they released like these minute-long clips of the film to garner interest in it, and really, they were giving away parts of the film that I would have rather seen on the big screen.
Right. I think a good example of something that did it right was The Dark Knight, because everyone wanted to see it. Remember the Why So Serious website? Yeah. It was like, what is this shit? Now they're doing it again with the next one with the Bane picture, and I'm underwhelmed. I don't give a shit. You know,
I honestly don't care.
It's hit or miss. Okay, I want to see the movie. I can understand people get excited about it. That's fine. I'm just saying I didn't. I just want to see the movie when it comes out. I'm not gonna waste time. Maybe 16-year-old Jason would have gotten into that.
And I could never get into marketing because I find almost every bit of marketing, especially movie marketing, to be just annoying and in total opposite of what I want to see from a film, you know, to be marketed.
Sometimes, the movie marketing, it gets on my nerves these days. And another thing is it's a double-edged sword because all I see when movies come out now, Bill, is, oh man, overhyped, didn't live up to the hype. And I get sick of that shit because
that's all those things where it's like, who did the hype? Who fell into the hype?
Yeah, it's like you did by getting yourself hyped up and then you saw it and never lived up to it. And
honestly, when somebody says that, what do you expect?
Like, I don't know.
I don't understand how they can be so hyped up that it doesn't meet an expectation whenever you don't know what to expect.
Right, it's just something to say when you didn't like the movie. And, you know,
if you don't enjoy the movie, say,
I've been to movies where I've been underwhelmed, but I don't blame the hype.
Yeah.
You know, I don't turn to someone, you said this was good! How dare you! You know? It's because it's just, the movie is what it is, no matter what someone says about it, and it's how you perceive it. But it's just strange to say, like, Super 8, when it came out, I saw many people say, it was overhyped. It didn't live up to the hype. And the hype was created by the viral marketing. So I'm asking this, should they just drop the viral marketing thing? It's hit or miss, right?
Sometimes it can be creative, but most times it's just stupid. It's a waste of time.
It was number one at the box office, so that's good. But I almost wonder if they would have done a Super 8 trailer which told you the story, why would that have been bad? You don't have to give anything away. You don't have to show the creature, but just show me what it's about, because I really had no idea what this was about going to the theater. Did you?
The only trailer I saw was the Super Bowl trailer. It was a minute and a half. Basically just laid it out like, here's a kid, here's a father. They obviously lost the mother. He's got friends that are involved with movie making.
Yeah, I knew it had
a train wreck, and there's some sort of a thing on the train.
Something busts out of a door. The Incredible Hulk. Yeah. I don't know. So I just wanted to say that the whole perception of J.J. Abrams can't live up to the hype that the marketing creates. I just think it's silly. You know, when I see the movie, I just watch the movie. So I just wanted to kind of rant a little about that.
I also think that the marketing in the movie posters and the whole beating the drum of produced by Steven Spielberg, so this is an homage to Spielberg. I think that actually hindered the film in a way for me.
Really?
Yeah, I felt that was a little too pushed in my face. Like,
oh, I get like
this
oh,
is you... this is an homage to Spielberg. You know, you have the posters
I understand.
That look,
you know,
like E.T., Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
I know what you mean. It's better to go see the movie, and then as you're sitting there going, you know what, this reminds me of like a Spielberg movie or something.
Exactly.
Just come up with your own.
That's exactly what I would have wanted.
Yeah, it's another marketing ploy where it's trying to get you into that.
I think I would have enjoyed the film more if it wasn't, the Spielberg angle wasn't played so hard.
Let's go ahead and get into the movie. The main character is this kid who just lost his mom. In a bad
steel mill accident.
Yeah, a horrible accident.
You know, opening up in the steel mill, changing the sign from 784 days accident-free to one, kind of setting the mood, going to the...
I thought that was awesome, by the way.
Yeah, the front of the house, which this scene... How many times have we seen this scene in a movie where the kid is sitting on a swing outside the house after a parent has died?
I'm not sure.
It just felt so familiar to me. There's a number of films that I've seen that exact scene. I didn't have a problem with it, but it was kind of strange for me to see that scene right off the bat.
Yeah, I like that it introduced his friends right away, and they're giving him his space, sure. You know?
Yeah.
And it introduces the character of Ron Elder. You wonder what that's about. Him and his dad obviously have baggage. He takes him off to jail during his mother's funeral.
Yeah. And maybe I'll be back tonight. I'll be back later tonight.
And it cuts to later on, now the boy is helping his buddy.
Yeah, it cuts to, I think, 4 months later after the funeral?
Yeah, I think that the main character's name is Joe, right?
Yeah, Joe Lamb.
And he's helping his buddies make a zombie film.
Yeah, Charles is the filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And the only other one I can remember is Carrie, which is the large-tooth firebug.
Yeah, and there's Preston.
Okay, Preston.
He was he's the kid that I recognize from other movies. He was like the Monster House kid. I was like,
okay.
He's CGI. I think he's that kid's CGI.
He's the whiny one, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's kind of...
Yeah, he's got that kind of nasal voice.
And then there was the other kid, Martin, the one with glasses, who's like the lead in the movie. And I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah, and there's so many lines. This is one thing that I really liked in the creation of these characters. The way they interact with one another and how from the beginning you find out that Martin has a very queasy stomach.
Yeah.
Like, they're talking about the mom and the way she died at the funeral, and he's already getting queasy. And then from the moment they open 4 months later at the school, Carrie's going, did you hear about Martin? He puked all over his locker today.
Yeah.
So you know, okay, so this kid's going to puke at some point during the course of the film already.
And you know what it reminded me of? I kind of talked to my dad about this, but in The Thing, the original The Thing...
The Thing from Another World.
Right. There was that overlapping dialogue between all the characters, which is a trademark of the director. Correct me if I'm wrong, Howard Hawks, I believe.
Yeah,
and they would talk over each other. And it's kind of a natural, kind of a unique way to do a scene. And that's the way the kids talked in this. And I thought it was really cool.
Well, it keeps the intensity of the scene going. Like, it keeps, you know, you've got to concentrate back and forth.
Right.
So it never stops.
And it makes me want to see the movie again because I was laughing at certain things and I know I missed other things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I want to just say on one level that I automatically had a personal connection to the movie because I lost my mom at a certain age. I don't know how old Joe is, but I was like, I was 10 years old. And it was in a way similar that they described in the movie where you couldn't see her.
Oh, man.
And
it was sudden.
It was a sudden thing, and I never got to see her. And I immediately had a personal attachment. Like, right there, the movie had its meat hooks in me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was even thinking about similarities between me and Joe. I would sneak out in the middle of the night to go with my friends, but we wouldn't go to film movies. We would have a cassette recorder and do funny tapes and stuff. We would go out to a parking garage because it was great audio. And
the acoustics are awesome.
Yeah, you know, we would do like fake man on the street type things and stuff, like interviews. And it was really silly. But I was thinking, like, I was like, I did shit like this when I was a kid all the time where, you know, my dad's asleep, where I'm going out the window. You know, sometimes I'd bring Vanessa with me, sometimes I wouldn't. Laura would threaten to tell on us, you know, just stuff like that. But it was kind of that adventure kind of time. And that's what I liked about the movies set in 79. It's later on in the 80s when I was doing the sneaking out stuff, but I was a little young back then. But maybe Steven, he can identify with this time period more, but I remember it.
It's because Steven's old.
But I remember the childhood years of sneaking out and everything is adventure and having fun with your friends. There's always the kid who is lagging behind, the kid who's the whiny kid, you know. Like, come on.
I guess I would have to be the whiny kid because I didn't have a group of friends like that when I was, you know, 9 or 10 years old. I kind of had one or two friends, and I think because the town I grew up in, although it's incredibly spookily similar in look to this town, this fictional town of Lillian, Ohio, that they use in the film. I grew up in this small town called Ritchieville in southwest Pennsylvania, and it was an old mining town. But the mine had shut down, I think, in the late 70s. So the majority of the town I grew up in was older people.
Right.
So there wasn't a whole lot of kids in my town or in my area, and it was so I didn't really have a group that we explored with,
right,
or anything. So I don't have that connection. I think I was always jealous of these sort of films, the children of them, and uh-huh. I'm like Stand By Me, The Goonies,
Explorers,
Super 8, you know, stuff like this. I didn't have that tight group of friends that all lived near each other. Like,
yeah.
in the film, Joe's at Charles's house at the beginning talking about making the film, and then he leaves. They're like, you can stay for dinner. He says no.
Yeah.
And he leaves, hops on his bike, and you think he's going to ride across town or something, and he just goes right across the road.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and see, I grew up in an apartment complex where there are other kids there. And
okay,
see,
yeah.
you know, we were a single-parent family, and there would be another family that's a single-parent family that just had a mom or something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. It's a cool dynamic, and I like that group of friends in the movie. That was really cool, and how they're making a movie. And there's hilarious stuff going on when they're making the movie at the little train station thing. And you can also, at the same time, you see that his dad and him don't really know each other. It's awkward
no.
between them. And his dad kind of wants to get rid of him and send him to baseball camp. Maybe he just doesn't know how to deal with it or makes him sad looking at him.
I saw his dad as more of a workaholic who
yeah.
left the child raising to his mom.
Yeah.
And when he's gone, there's that disconnection of, I'm scared shitless. What
yeah.
do I do with this kid?
yeah, yeah.
Let me try to push him off on somebody else. That's what my parents did to me.
And how great is Kyle Chandler? He says it all with his face. He doesn't have to say it out loud.
He is one of those expressive actors that can convey such a heavy amount of emotion in so little words. You know, he makes that instant connection with the audience. He's got something, and he's had it his entire acting career from...
Mm-hmm.
I loved him on Early Edition, and then there was Friday Night Lights. Who can forget that?
Of but course, yeah. That's where we fell in love with him, Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, Coach
just
Taylor,
fantastic.
Man. Just...
But I love the bit with Joe and his mom's locket. And you
mm-hmm.
notice that when his dad's telling him and kind of stressing Joe out, he holds his locket. And later on, you see, when the train wreck, he's holding the locket again, kind of like, protect me kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I love the whole setup of when they're filming at the train tracks is that his friend Charles always says, production values!
Yes, mint!
yeah, that's mint! There's the town girl that they like, who's, I don't, she's kind of a girl that they look at from afar. They don't really know her. That's what I get the sense of.
And she's the unreachable beauty that, you know, you, kind of like the just whenever you're coming into that, hey, I really like girls time.
Yeah, like, whoa.
She's the one everyone's afraid to talk to
yeah,
because
Alice.
They think she's unobtainable, you know.
Right. So when he says he's got Alice, he's like, what? You know, you've got Alice Daynard is going to be in the movie. So that was funny. And how great is the scene where she's doing her lines and just blows them away?
That girl is incredible.
She blew
me away.
She was incredible. And I love how she goes, and her character says, I love you to the other character. And Martin goes, I love you too. It's just like totally, that was fantastic. And how
is that? And you're like, that's really good. And it's just Martin wiping away a tear.
But the little parts where Riley says to Preston, okay, I need you to go talk on the phone in the background. I need this to be realistic. He goes, yeah, I know what I'm doing. So when they're talking in the foreground, you see in the background, Preston walks over to the phone and he picks it up and he's just opening and shutting his mouth, pretending
yeah.
to talk really badly.
yeah, but he's not, it's like he doesn't even, it's funny because Charles is like, hey, you got to pick it up, dial, act like you're talking. Preston just completely ignores and just picks it up and starts talking.
yeah, and he's like, bah, bah, bah,
blah, 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 blah.
That's so funny. And then, of course, you know, the trailer, the movie trailer starts to happen where a train is coming, right? Like, oh, shit, here it comes, you know?
I love this. I don't know what they did with the sound at that part to make it otherworldly, but there's a vibration. A natural vibration, but like a wah-wah-wah-wah-wah.
Yeah, to the tracks.
Yeah.
And they're like, get ready, production values, everybody get in places, load the film. And there's like the stressing out of loading up the film and the tensions building it. Will they get the film loaded and then start filming? And then they do. And then, you know, the truck drives into the train, just like in the trailer we've seen. Another thing I liked about the movie is that I didn't know what the hell this movie is about. So it was awesome seeing, okay, now we're going to... And then the longest, biggest... most ridiculous train explosion ever.
That train had to be moving at 200 miles an hour.
It was, I literally was like, holy shit! You know, when it was all going on.
I think when it, the point where it just got so ridiculous, I kind of giggled, was whenever it knocked that gigantic fuel tank off of its track.
Right.
It was like, foomp, and it goes flying through the air and explodes on impact. I thought it was fun, but it was ridiculous.
I started having a theory during the movie as over-the-top things happen, and it was, this isn't really happening. This is a kid telling this story. This is a kid blowing this out of proportion, what is happening. And then I realized the kid is J.J. Abrams because he's telling the story.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. I never really thought about it like that, but you're right because it's just so ridiculous. There was an interview that J.J. did with Steven, and J.J. said that his wife told him, listen, I know you love the train wreck, but you're going to have to cut it down. Because it was, he said it was like a 10-minute train wreck.
Yeah.
It just didn't stop.
Guys, watch out! Joe, what the hell are you...
And that's what, as it keeps going on, I was just like, holy shit!
Yeah.
And like
you
when
think it's over.
Yeah.
And then you, Joe stands up and looks at something and it says explosives.
I'm just like, oh shit!
That whine pitch, like, beep. Boom!
Oh, and then when the kids dive under the little train station thing, and then a friggin' car goes right through it, and it's like, oh, shit, they're dead. But they're not dead. They're fine. Well, they're still running.
There was a line that Martin did, where as they're crawling under there, he goes, are we still alive?
Are we still alive? That was great. I love, you know, they set up the characters, and then they put them in this incredible, like, wreck, and you're like, holy shit, and the kids are living up to being hilarious, because
there was this perfect closing line to kind of let all the tension out, whenever, after the explosion, they're all looking from one another, and Carrie gets up and goes, did you see those explosions?
Yeah, because he's like such a pirate.
This is this kid's wet dream.
Yeah, he's like, oh! And then Zach, of course, he's like, like
puking bombing all over.
And I love when Joe is like, are you okay? And he just gives a thumbs up as he's puking.
Yeah.
And then they see blood, but it turns out to be paint. And he thinks that the girl is dead. And they're all like, come back to reality. And then when she's there, you know, everything's okay. But I love the establishment of when the something's banging on the door and the door flies off. Didn't that remind you of Lost, the way the hatch door lands right?
Yeah, the way
right
the hatch blew, yeah.
Yeah, and you never see what comes out of there, but it cuts to the film still, the camera still going, zzz, and then it runs out of film. So I was like, oh, when is this going to happen? When are we going to see what's on there? But we'll get to that later. And then there's the weird Rubik's Cubes on the ground. The white things. You wonder what that is.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
And then I can't believe the black guy is still alive who's driving the truck.
With half the car sheared off.
Oh, yeah. And he's their professor. What was that guy's name? I got to remember, like, Dr.
Dr. Woodward.
Dr. Woodward. Oh, it's Dr. Woodward. And he's telling them something like, go, get out of here. Well, They'll kill you.
They're all like, okay, Dr. Woodward, I'm Charles. I'm in your eighth period. He brings the gun up.
Yeah.
It's like, who are you?
And I gotta say, at this point in the movie, through all the loud explosion stuff, I'm already kind of off kilter. So when he kind of goes, pulls a gun up like that, you're kind of like, oh shit! You know, like, on guard now, because you don't know what's going to happen in this movie. He tells them some crap they don't understand about, don't tell anybody of this, get out of here, these men will kill you.
If they find you, you and your parents will be killed. Go!
And so what do? Is the next day, Charles, he's like,
Production values,
we gotta go back.
Yeah.
We gotta film there. Do you understand that? I love all that. And I love the setup of the doctor, this mystery. Like, what point did this guy who he worked for go to start working at the high school? That's what I was trying to figure out. Like, did he lose his job at that place and then came to work at the high school or something?
I was thinking, you know, I was confused in that, well, not confused, but I was thinking that maybe he was one of those, like, conspiracy nuts. Because he had, like, a map of the train travel.
Right.
Like, the tracks it was going to use and all that. And they were transporting it from Area 51 to this base in Ohio. I forget what it's called, but supposedly it's the new Area 51.
Yeah.
And it's everything. It's this huge underground place, and it's where all the crazy government stuff goes on, apparently.
They were transporting an alien with the technology to this other place. Somehow he knew about it and he wanted to deride it because we learn later on, right, that he knows some things of what's going on with the alien.
Yeah.
So that's what all that was about. So it escapes and it's out in the town and you don't know what that's about. But I almost, did you expect to find out what was on that reel of film like immediately afterwards? Like, let's develop this stuff, you know? But it almost took a little bit longer than I thought it would.
I honestly didn't. I didn't think they would see anything until the end because, you know, you have to think how long it took to develop film back then.
Yeah.
You know, you took it to the photo mart and then
it took
a couple days.
They did try to develop it for production value, but then the guy's like, it'll take 3 days and stuff. Yeah. And he's like...
And that was so crazy to see that kid because... I've only ever known him as this little kid on, I think it was Seventh Heaven.
Oh, really?
The show, this little blonde kid with a bowl haircut, and now he's all grown up and looking like a hippie in this movie.
Yeah, and he wants to sell Charles pot, you know, like, you want any pot? Or
oh, that killed me.
And he's and he's
that
trying to date
me.
His sister.
Like, hey, do you want any pot? I'm like, no, I just want my film developed, thanks. How's your sister? the cute one, not the ugly one.
And so they're all talking about what was going on, you know, I love that Charles, his voice of reason is he just wants to work on the movie. And Joe is talking about like, well, what is he trying to stop that's on the train? He's like, well, didn't you hear what he said? We'll be killed if we talk about this. But they keep talking about it anyway, which is great.
The moment the accident happened, the Air Force showed up.
Right.
And yeah, that's when things started getting strange. Kyle Chandler's character
goes
to talk to the general in charge because they're not getting any answers.
Yeah.
Now, it's really secretive, but if it's just a train wreck,
why are they being so
what's
secretive?
Going on? Is there some sort of chemical or something that he should know about to protect the city from? And that's when Kyle Chandler's character goes to the sheriff and says, hey, I think we have something here. Mm-hmm. And the sheriff is shutting him down.
Yeah, he's like, "Oh, you should have taken a break after your wife died." You know?
Yeah, that's the general thing with. It seems like with the kid and the husband is you should have taken a break.
Right. I love the scene at the Kelvin gas station.
Yeah.
Did you like that? But when he's like, well, "What is that you got?"
Walkman. It's like a stereo. Play your own cassette tapes. You want to try?
I don't think so. Kids walking around with their own stereo is just what we need. It's a slippery slope, my friend.
Yes, sir.
But then we get the establishment of the creature.
Mm-hmm.
And it attacks the car. You don't know what happened to the sheriff, and it sucks the guy out of the mart.
It has incredible force.
And it's really fast.
Like, yeah.
It is scary the way they do the editing.
Well, the one thing that I found so unnerving that I loved about this scene is the sheriff is pumping gas.
Mm-hmm.
And as he's, you know, the sounds start to happen, the dings of the money, you know, the ticking as the gallons are pumping, increase in frequency.
Uh-huh.
And then they kind of calm down a little bit. And then whenever the dumpster shoots out, they increase in again.
Right. Oh, and remember all the
constant ding, 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 ding during the scene. And it's so unnerving.
And remember all the dogs run by and he's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Like, where are all the dogs going? Yeah, that was a great scene. I got to say, I was unnerved whenever they were outside. I was like, when is this thing going to turn up again? Because it did have me unnerved, because you never knew when it was going to attack again. But at the same time, I'm like, what is this thing? Is it nice? Is it friendly? Is it misunderstood? I don't know.
What does it want?
Yeah, what is it?
My main thing. Like, it obviously wanted something. It wasn't like, is it just attacking to attack?
Right.
I didn't think that's... I think it needed something, you know, in the humans were just collateral.
Right. And it wasn't until we find out the engine parts and stuff are being stolen and people talking about generators that I realized he was building something. And that takes me back
and
to...
And the power starts going out.
Right, like stealing cables and stuff.
Yeah, and they're stealing just miles of copper cable.
And that was another, I think, a reference to The Thing also. Because remember, The Thing is trying to build a ship.
Uh-huh.
John Carpenter's the thing. He's trying to build a ship.
Also, if you remember in, you know, Thing from Another World, they use the Geiger counter readings.
Uh-huh.
And in this, they're never without a Geiger counter.
And I would almost say...
It's soldiers on the coming through town with the Geiger counter or at the accident site with the Geiger counter.
If we go back to the Spielberg thing, Bill, Spielberg was influenced by all the same movies, too. The Thing and all that. Mm-hmm. And I want to say that J.J. Abrams, you know, he co-produces this with Spielberg, and it was his childhood reflecting it. You know, I'm talking about J.J. Abrams, you know, he's showing what he saw in movies from his childhood. I'm not necessarily sure that everything is a Spielberg homage in the movie.
No, definitely not. I think it's
just his whole, every movie he saw as a kid. There's more references to other movies. There's even references to Romero, like Dr. Romero and stuff.
Yeah.
That I thought was great.
But, and again, that's why I think... I was expecting one thing and I got another. I think that's why I, because as we talk about it, I'm starting to appreciate the film more on its own as opposed to a Spielberg homage.
Right.
Because it is its own film.
Yeah, it's not, it reminds you certain things of Jaws, and the things that reminded me of Jaws I liked. I almost thought of the creature as a Jaws. He appears sometimes, kills somebody. People don't know what happened to that person. They're just gone the next day, and not sure what's going on. A town in panic kind of thing reminded me of Jaws. The whole when the town shuts down reminded me of Jaws kind of thing. So there's different things like that. And it was in a good way, it reminded me of that, you know, not in a bad way. Like, oh, shit, I've seen this shit before. You know, I never felt like that. But another thing is I start to care about Joe so much and his relationship with Alice.
Mm-hmm.
The movie got to me emotionally a lot, more than just the sci-fi stuff.
There's this scene where they're doing a pickup shot and he has to do Alice's makeup, her zombie makeup.
Right.
And they start to connect on a more intimate level. Felt like... I had that as a kid at that age. I've had that moment. I think we've all almost probably
when
had that
moment.
You're
just staring at someone and you're like, this person is amazing.
Yeah, exactly. And my heart started beating a little harder.
She starts to do her, she wants to do a zombie good. She goes, I've been working on my zombie. And she shows him the zombie.
How am I supposed to be a zombie?
Oh, pretty much just be a lifeless ghoul with no soul, dead eyes, scary.
Did you ever have Miss Mullen?
For English?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like her, but hungry for human flesh. Like, she wants to turn somebody into a zombie. Because that's kind of what zombies do.
Okay. Oh my god, yeah, that's really good.
Oh.
and he's just staring at her like in amazement, and she's doing her zombie, and you feel the same way, like, wow. Like, I can see why he's in love with this girl. She's incredible.
I felt like I was 13 years old again.
Yeah, and your heart's beating fast, and you understand exactly. And then he's just like, whoa. He's just kind of, like, blown away. Like,
he doesn't know. It's so funny, because once she goes in for the bite, and she's like, was that okay? He just kind of has this reaction, like, yeah. That was good.
Yeah. And I got to say, when they start bringing in the military and Noah Emmerich's character, who is in everything. Is this guy not in everything or what?
Well, not only is he in everything, he plays such a good bad guy. And I think it's because he's a taller guy. He's stoic, but he's also got this really rough face and these intense eyes.
You don't know what's going on in his head. He could be thinking about stabbing you in the back as soon as you turn around, or he could be not thinking anything about you. You just don't know.
Well, yeah, and you know, I also have to say that he also plays a really good guy in, there was a film a couple years ago that he was involved with in New Line with Jim Caviezel.
Yeah, he played the best friend in Frequency, if I remember
right.
Yeah,
you're right. It's one of those films, again, that deals with family, cross-time radio link kind of thing, but it's really all about a father and a son.
So, I mean, the cast, we just mentioned the whole cast is great, and the different actors you see in the movie.
Yeah.
But I like how he starts coming around, and we know that they're searching for the tire tracks, this car. Because remember the night they filmed the movie, Alice, she stole her dad's car. And they took it out.
They saw the car go, but they didn't know who was in it.
Yeah, and at first, you know, she didn't want Joe to be there because he's the sheriff's son. He's like, no, I'm cool, man, trust me. Okay, remember when the military is searching through the professor's house, and they've all got blue berets on, and Charles has already decided they need
production
values. He's right.
Production values.
So they dress Joe up in the same outfit as the military guys in the background.
How the hell did they get that?
I don't know, but it was hilarious because they're doing a scene, and in the background you see real military, and then Joe in the military outfit, and he's talking about Nam. Like, I know you're in Nam, so I did this favor for you.
Sis.
He worked at Romero Chemical. Found out some things the company was doing, and after what you told me last night at the bar, I thought you should know.
Are we going to get in trouble for being here?
Shh. Production values.
We're talking about production values.
Gary, shut up.
She's going to kill us.
Gary.
Don't cover my mouth.
You just made this discovery today. You understand this is top secret.
Of course.
I would never have given you this information unless we had worked together in Vietnam.
Those were hard times.
I'd rather not talk about it.
Understood. You're a good friend.
Their dialogue was fantastic, I thought. And Kyle Chandler, you know, he's going there to talk to the guy, and he knows something. What does he hear over the radio? That's what it is.
Well, they know they're hiding something.
Yeah.
So he gets one of his geeky deputies to bring in a descrambler. And they hear them talking on these certain wavelengths, and they hear initiate Operation Walking Distance.
Right. And when he says, I know about walking distance, they're like, you know what? I will talk to you. Come and meet me at so-and-so. And he's like, all right. Well, that sounds good. And then he sees his son there filming with the kids, and he's like, damn it, and he grabs a camera and all that.
Yeah, and Charles goes, Mr. Lamb, I know that that's your camera, but technically it's my film.
he wants his film back. But the scene that I really loved in the movie is, it doesn't matter if Alice's dad says she can't see Joe, and Joe's dad says he can't see Alice. They don't care. They just want to be together and be friends and stuff. You know, it's not about like making out or anything like that. That's not the kind of friendship.
That innocence. Yeah. Still.
They're just friends with each other. And he's watching. You know what I love? Also, the little nuance of Joe being embarrassed about everything. And he tries to cover, like when she notices the locket, he hides it immediately. And when she bumps into his camera, his projector, and he's watching film of his mother, he gets embarrassed about that too.
Well, yeah, and it's the way she comes into the room, and he's embarrassed because he paints models.
Right.
And then he's embarrassed because he's got a test with a C- on.
I love that. He goes C-, he turns it over real quick.
Yeah.
I can't let her see
the power's out. Mm-hmm. So they're just sitting on the floor talking, and that's whenever
the power comes back on.
The projector kicks on when the power comes back.
And it was of his mother, and she starts crying and explains that what – she basically says what her dad has always wanted to tell Kyle Chandler and never could tell him, mm-hmm. and that is he got drunk the night before. He took his shift off, so Joe's mom went to work. And she died, and it should have been him who died, and he feels guilty, and he hates himself about it because she was a great lady, and that's like it's all like all this stuff came pouring out of her, which her dad always wanted to say.
And also we find out just after this that her mom left her dad very, very early on. So I mean it's not a death, but it's certainly they have a connection in the yes. single parents that are having a really, really rough time of it.
Mm-hmm. They don't know how to raise their
Joe's
kids.
Joe's father throws himself into work. Her father throws himself into booze.
Right. And it's very realistic. That happens in the real world. Single yeah. families. That's what – I also love the scenes with Charles who has – they have way too many kids, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone's doing their own thing, making messes. Someone's watching TV and stuff. That's realistic too. It's not like all quiet and everything like that.
Yeah, and there was a couple shots with that family in like one of the second or third scenes of the family – that it was a wide shot of the whole living room with all the kids and them at the table and everything. And it reminded me of Close Encounters, yeah. even E.T. in a way.
Yeah, Richard Dreyfuss's kids.
Yeah, with and all the, you know, just that
always,
shot of the whole family.
The whole house is always trashed.
Yeah.
You know, just everything's a disaster, a mess. Yeah, that all reminded me of that.
Isn't that funny, though, how in the way it works with the families that you assume are very happy, in large families and everything. The house is always trashed, but they're happy.
Yeah.
With single parent families, you know, it's the house is always clean, but they've all got issues. It's like, decide which one it is. Which one would you want to be a part of?
Oh, remember the cool scene with the electrician guy going to look and saying, you know, all these wires are gone, and he hears noise in the junkyard. So he keeps rising his cherry picker up higher to get a look at what's going on over there. I thought that was a good
scene. And it malfunctions, right?
Yeah,
it won't go down.
Because whenever the creature is around it, it messes with the electronics, which
yeah,
seemed
there's
like
something up with this creature that it's got some sort of maybe like an electronic EMP,
yeah.
an electromagnetic
yeah.
kind of.
One thing we know, we absolutely know for a fact that J.J. Abrams loves is electromagnetism.
Yeah, that's true.
And I almost thought, hey, reference to Close Encounters, right? Always messes with all the electronics
yeah.
like that. Throws everything off on the fritz. So he's stuck up there, and then, you know, you see the trees start to move. And then the guy gets snatched.
Then
and
the
it's,
smoke monster comes out.
Yeah. And then, you know, he comes up, snatches him, like, holy shit, what is going on with this thing, right?
Yeah.
We also see that Noah Emmerich's character basically tricks Kyle Chandler into going to say what he knows, but really all they do is take him into custody and lock him up.
Yeah, lock him in a room.
Right.
I can assure you the answer is no.
That's how Joe is able to do whatever he wants at that point, you know? His dad's
yeah.
gone.
The kids are off doing their thing while the government's setting a wildfire miles away from the thing in a conspiracy to move everyone out of the town so mm-hmm. that they can try to move in on the alien.
Right. And what is this like? I can't remember when this scene happens, when Joe goes to Alice's house and his dad is a total dick to him and tells him never come over there again.
That's early on. That's
yeah.
after they shoot the first or second scene because
okay.
He goes and he says, you know, listen, we need help. We need to continue shooting. And she's like, I want no part of this.
Right. And,
you know,
and that's you're right, because that, after that she goes, okay, I'll do it. It's like she feels sorry for him. She doesn't like how her dad was so mean to him.
Yeah.
And we find out later on when she tells him all about what his dad blames himself, she knows why he was mean to him, too. So when she goes home, he's like, her dad is like, sit down, I want to talk to you. She goes, no. And he's like, get out of here, just like your mom. And that's when, you know, he chases after with a car and he crashes.
And then, somehow I saw that coming, just the drunken idiot that he is.
And then, like, the friggin' creature takes her, and I was like, what the hell is going on here?
That's when I kind of knew that the creature wasn't just killing people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they're not going to kill the girl.
Right. And also, when Joe's dad says, you cannot see that girl anymore, he gets pissed off and he goes to the cemetery to see his mom's grave, to visit mm-hmm. her grave. That's when he sees some shit going on, like something digging.
Super digging.
Yeah, like, what the hell is that? And, you know, we knew that payoff later. And also, let's not forget about the weird Rubik's Cube gets sucked through his wall. So they know some crazy shit is going on. And I can't remember, is it after? Yeah, it is. It's after Alice has been abducted by the creature. They get the film finally. And he's kind of yelling at Joe because it turns out the reason Alice is in the film is because he has a crush on her. And Joe, like, pretty much stole his crush, like, immediately. Come on, dude.
Again, another situation I've been in to an exact point.
Yeah, I think we all have, where two guys like the same girl or whatever.
Yeah, that always sucks.
But I love when they finally get to see the footage on the Super 8 film. I was like, finally, we get to see this shit. And then one thing that I wish they would have shown less. I know we didn't see the creature very well, but I almost wish we didn't see any of them up until that point. So the first time we see what any of them looks like is on that film. You know what I mean?
I don't know. Even whenever we saw the film, I was like, "What the? Is that a spider?"
It almost looks like tentacles or a spider.
Yeah,
I
thought it was like a gigantic tarantula.
Maybe it was a pervert or deformed kid or something.
A deformed kid.
Maybe an elf or a leprechaun.
It was nothing like that, penis breath.
But I was, they're just kind of like, what the hell? You know, don't know what's going on there.
What the hell?
But I love that the crazy professor who went to work at the school, he has this place where he takes all the kids' crap they bring to school, their toys, the electronic football, and he locks it in this trailer out in the parking lot.
Yes, the dungeon, as they call it.
And that's where he also hides all of his stolen research.
Yeah, who would think to look there? You know, they
even the military didn't think of it.
No.
Because they want, you know, they're prodding him, tell us what you know. What is the creature doing? What does it want? Where would it hide? And he won't tell them anything. And they poison him.
No, they kill him with lethal injection.
Right. Yes. Yeah,
they're like, okay, fine, you're not going to talk. You're dead.
And that's when we know Nora Emmerich. Man, he's a cold mother sucker. Am I right? Holy crap.
He's cold.
I still had a this is all in a kid's imagination kind of. Have you ever seen Invaders from Mars? The old movie where the kid, he keeps seeing people going over a hill in his backyard, and then they come back and there's something weird about them because they've been abducted by aliens. I almost started to think, oh my God, is this all going to be like that movie where it's all a dream at the end or something? I don't know, because it was getting more and more outrageous with the, not at this point yet, but it's still kind of crazy when the military is setting fires and now they're telling people they have to evacuate their homes. And remember, they round them all up. And, you know, all the family members are there. And when Joe finds out that Alice has been taken, you know, his dad's like, they keep pumping me full of drugs, but no one believes me. But the thing, whatever it is, it took Alice. And he's like, I believe you, because he's seen it on his video. And he's like, where the hell's my dad? You know, he's like, where's my dad at? And I
was surprised that no one asked at one point, where's the sheriff?
And I loved his escape scene. I thought that was fantastic.
He has to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, Kyle Chandler beating some ass and then blowing up that fuel tank.
It was his superhero scene where it's that tight corridor and they're walking down and he bashes them in the face, goes down, does that squat, grabs the gun, looks up.
Yeah, remember he steals his uniform.
Yeah.
And I would have said, like, it would have been a real Spielberg moment if he went, smile, you son of a, when he shot the fuel tank. But that would have been like, okay, too much with the references, JJ.
Smile, you son of a.
That would have been something in Paul.
Yeah, it would have, wouldn't it? It was just too blatant.
I think it was.
Oh, my God. No. I got to see this movie, Paul.
It sounds familiar.
But But the kids figure out that they need to... I forget how Joe figures out, but they need to go to the dungeon in the school parking lot. That's where he would have hidden his research that the military's after, right?
I think they're talking about how, you know, they go through his house. They wouldn't have found that. But where does he keep everything else? And, you know, the Carrie was like, well, he took my... my electronic football game and put it in the dungeon. They're like, yeah, the dungeon.
Yeah, and so they bribe... I love how they bribe the photo mat, the camera store guy, into taking them because he gets his sister to flirt with him.
Yeah, well, Charles makes a deal with her that he would watch the twins so she can go to some party if she goes and flirts with the film store guy.
Yeah, and that whole thing where he's like, well, you know, watch my upholstery, and he takes them all, and I can't remember specifics, but a lot of hilarious repartee between the kids.
They're very impressed with his car. He asks Charles what kind of music his sister likes, yeah. And he goes, I don't know, disco? And he goes, I can get back into disco.
Yeah, I don't know.
Then the next time they see him, that's Freak Out is on his radio.
he's already starting. Like, okay, let me get into this. But I love the whole, when they go through the science stuff, the Area 51 film and stuff, that was so J.J. Abrams too, isn't it? Like Lost, old footage.
Along with the accompanying materials and exhibits within this parcel is intended to fulfill two objectives. The first is to provide an overview of events leading up to the assault on Technician 58042. The second is to provide a detailed account of the subject's escape attempt, as well as an analysis of potential casualties.
But I love the footage. When the footage starts, you see a spaceship, and it falls apart into those little cubes.
Yeah.
And one thing, I've thought about this a lot since I've seen the movie. This creature, it's obviously intelligent. And the doctor, he walks over to it. And in the footage, he gets picked up. And they're like, oh, you know. He gets dropped, and he goes, earlier he said this, when he touched him, he knew his thoughts and what he wanted. He wanted to go home and all this stuff. You also see in the footage, they feed him like a slab of beef.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say,
massive chunks of cow.
Whatever this creature was crashed here and it was intelligent, right? And they treated it like, they poked at it and prodded it and fed it like it was a lion or something.
Yeah.
And they, I'm not going to say dehumanized it because he wasn't a human, but they took away its, they made it like into a dumb cow or something that they just, a lab rat. They made it a lab rat and they fed it
beef.
Because
it couldn't communicate outwardly.
Right.
You know, in a voice, and it communicates, you know,
by touching,
telepathically, by touch, you know, because it's a higher, you know, a higher level creature.
So I'm almost
automatically
thinking,
it's dumb.
I'm almost thinking that the creature would have been friendly had we not messed with it so much. Had they not experienced, and what I was thinking
is human nature to automatically be afraid of something that's different.
And the way they fed it beef, I'm almost thinking it didn't have a taste for meat. They gave it to him. That's why he's taking people, because he's craving some meat, because that's what he's been fed for how many years he's been in captivity, right?
Sure.
So I was thinking that, like, and I was like, are they going to reveal that this thing is actually likes the kids and it's nice or whatever? You know, I didn't know what was going on, but when they go on the military shows up and takes all the kids on the bus, that whole alien attack sequence, I was like, my daughter would not have made it through this scene, because this shit was scary, you know?
It was, because it's you kind of get an idea that it's going to happen, and then when it does happen, when it smashes into the bus.
Right. And did you get a feeling it had a relationship with Noah Emmerich's character? Like, it knew that guy.
Well, it did, because in the film that they were watching at the school before the soldiers took them, it mentioned that Colonel Nellick had forced them to do this, do that, so... It knew Nellick either by name and probably by face.
Yeah, because the doctor even says, you knew what you were doing, you know, kind of stuff. Like,
and if the doctor knows everything that's going on, when the monster, I hate to call it a monster, when the creature touched him, he then probably downloaded all his thoughts and knew what Nellick was up to.
Right. And we get some good looks at the creature now. Not right in the face, but we get some good looks. And, I was getting the Cloverfield vibe, were you?
Oh, I was so far beyond Cloverfield vibe. I was like, that must be his little brother.
I was like, this because, is Clover. The only thing that was missing was the weird sacks on the side of his head. The Cloverfield.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where I was like, damn. Yeah, I was disappointed because that Neville Page who did the creature design mm-hmm. is really hung up on this Cloverfield kind of design. Just that, I don't know, I don't like it.
Well,
I wasn't expecting it. I guess I just wanted something different. Well, who knows if it was different, if I would have liked it.
I had kind of a geek out moment where I was like, that's awesome in the world of J.J. Abrams. Is this thing from the same place as the Cloverfield monster? You know what I mean?
See, I wish I would have had that reaction. I think maybe I would have enjoyed it more in the moment to maybe think, like, this is a baby Cloverfield monster.
Like, not even necessarily maybe the same species on the same planet or maybe a different species from the same world. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's more intelligent. I don't know if the Cloverfield monster was intelligent. It kind of seemed really angry, so we don't know. We know it came from space by the satellite dropping on the end. But I had a different reaction. We're like, oh, this is kind of cool. It's like from the same kind of, you know, it's from JJ's imagination. So naturally the creature is going to look similar, or he hires the same people to do it. So I thought that was really cool. But the whole bus attack where it's pulling the guys out and slamming them down. And then, you know, the kids are trying to get out and Martin is throwing up again. That was the best vomit scene, by the way.
Oh, my gosh. That was the projectile vomit coming out of Martin was hilarious.
Because that scene, it's so tense, and the kids are screaming, how do they get out of there? And the creature's, like, killing guys, and it's trying to get in. And all of a sudden, they're all, like, freaking out, and Martin's just like, it was fantastic.
Yeah, it really was.
I loved it. And I love it as they're escaping. You can see on the other end of the bus is a creature trying to get in, and it's completely distracted from them. And I had my mind wondering, like, would it even attack them? Because it seems like he's purposely.
I was thinking maybe, you know, it's got the electromagnetic field. Maybe, you know, and it communicates via, you know, telepathy or whatever you want to call it. Maybe it can sense. Now I'm way reading into this shit.
No, I just
maybe it can sense the what's the word I'm looking for? The intentions of something.
Or
like these people are.
Thought further than that, Bill. I thought the creature has touched Alice and now knows the boys because
there
it's touched Alice. But that's not the case anyway. But we still, our minds were wondering that. And I love the whole Noah Emmerich death scene. I thought was great. It's kind of like, oh shit!
That was a rather bloody PG-13 death.
Yeah, he's just like unloading on it, and the creature's just like, if it would have talked, it would have been like, "Remember me, asshole," or something, you know. And he sees no more. And when the one dickhead military guy takes his mom's locket, he's like, hey! And he sticks it in his pocket. I love that he gets it back.
I think that guy was, like, chopped in half.
Yeah, and he gets his locket back, so that's good.
Yeah, and then the hippie drives up in the
hey,
car.
Man! Yeah, I love that.
What the hell happened here?
Don't you love that he's getting high and not... Or was he... You know, he is. He's getting high as the military drives up earlier, and he doesn't even notice. That was funny stuff.
Drugs are so bad!
He delivers the PG-13 F-bomb.
Right.
In that moment, he looks at the bus and says, what the?
I love these PG-13 F-bombs, because it's like, we're going to have the F-word in here, and we're going to use it well, damn it.
Yeah, you have to pick your moment.
Yeah, and they do. When it makes you laugh like that, you realize, like, holy crap, one good, well-placed F-bomb really works other than just riddled with the F-bomb, you know?
Well, yeah, and it also, it kind of brings a levity kind of to it, a moment of reality in so much unreality.
Oh, and you know what? We can't forget about Preston, the friend who got left behind, who has the 8mm film. Kyle Chandler shows up, and he's like, where's my boy at? And he goes, well, I don't know if I should tell you. And he goes,
Preston, you tell me everything, and I won't throw you in jail.
Yes, sir.
but I think you should look at this first.
What I love is that they bring the two dads together.
Yeah,
because we're waiting
a fantastic
for that
scene.
And he's just like, you know. And I love it when two guys are finally sitting there together. When he wants to unload on him, he doesn't need to. He goes, I just wanted to say, you know, and he's like, I know. You know, he's just like, that's, they don't have to say any more than that, right? They don't have to, like, they don't have to do any of that. Just like, I just want to say I was sorry. All right, thanks. That's it.
Yeah, and it, again, one of those moments with Kyle Chandler where his face says it all.
Yeah, and I gotta, the movie had me sucked in emotionally, Bill. I was really into this movie emotionally, and I cared about these characters. And it's something you don't get often. Every once in a while you do, good movies or whatever, but I was really like into the whole kid dynamic, and of course I love Kyle Chandler. It doesn't hurt to cast Kyle Chandler as the dad, and you already love the guy anyway. But when the whole town started going nuts where their weapons and stuff were on the fritz, cannons were shooting, you know, tanks exploding, that's where I was like, this is all in a kid's imagination. I'm telling you, that's what this is going to be, because it's getting more and more outlandish, you know? Because they're like, they're just, it's got a mind of its own. It's going crazy.
It's one of those things where they you would think they would know better, but it's so typical of like the military mindset of, well, let's just kill it with fire.
Right, right.
You know, it's like, you know better.
That's what the old time movies do. The military does to an alien from another world. They want to kill it. But I love at that point when everything's going nuts and houses are blowing up and shit, I was like, this is all like in a kid's head. He's telling this story and it's more and more crazy as it goes on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was still waiting for that to happen. And again, J.J. Abrams is the child and he's telling the story. But as it splits off, I love that. I mean, when I thought about it, it was perfect that the kid who is the pyromaniac who loves explosions, it would come down to just Joe and Carrie.
Yeah.
His explosives expert buddy.
That scene is so tense, and when they run into that house for just that moment, and Charles raids the fridge, starts drinking a Coke, like, that's not yours.
Yeah, that's not yours.
I'm thirsty. There's the, they're trying to get back to where they need to go, and then there's the explosion, and Martin's leg is broken, and he's already starting to cry about it.
Yeah, I love that, where he's like, I'm going to put this bandage on it. He's like, ah! He's like, I didn't do anything yet!
But those little moments with the kids just are so great.
Yeah, at that point, you know all these guys, and they're just cracking you up left and right. Even though it's a sense of danger, you're really worried about them. There's shrapnel and shit flying everywhere, right?
Yeah, well, whenever that, I'm surprised all that happened was a broken leg on that explosion.
Right. Oh, and, you know, when Joe is like, he's going, he knows where the creature is and where he probably took Alice, so he's going. At that point, you're scared shitless of the creature. You've seen what it's done, right? But Joe doesn't care. Think back to that scene where Alice looked at him and she played a zombie. You'd go back for it too, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, you would. And so I thought that was completely believable that he would. And plus, this story, you believe that Joe would do that.
And well, and again, it's that childlike sense of wonder and innocence to think that she's even still alive.
Right. And even his friends at that point, you know she's dead by now. It's like, don't say that. You better shut your face. So when they go into that hole, you know, you're thinking, don't go down there, kid. Oh, my God.
I like that they used Carrie's supply of explosives,
right?
With the sparklers. You got any sparklers? Got some. Pours packets upon packets of them out.
Like, hell yeah, I do. I'm loaded. And then when they go down in there and you see the creature running around, he's putting all these machine parts together, and then it's creepy how he's got people hung upside down in there. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, what is he doing to them? Is there some kind of weird mind meld thing? But then, Bill, you see he's gnawing on a foot.
Yeah, he's hungry.
And then you're like, holy shit, he's eating people. You know, it's like, holy crap. And see, I was really confused at this point in the movie, Bill, because I wasn't sure how I was supposed to feel about the creature. Am I supposed to just be scared shitless of him? Am I supposed to feel some remorse? Is he good at heart? Is he just really scared and angry? I think he's all of those things, isn't he?
Yeah, and but you know, I really wasn't even thinking about the creature at this point. I was more thinking about the kids. Like, what are they getting themselves into? How are they going to get out of this?
Right. And when, you know,
because I mean, if you look at those tunnels, the way they're all scratched out and like the texture of the walls and everything, like this thing means business.
Yeah, I love the movement of the creature, how he's scrambling around. He's doing busy work and stuff, trying to bit his, he's gnawing on food as he's working, trying to get his machine to work, because basically we know what he's trying to do is he's trying to go home. And I love that they also they established in the film that in the, you know, the secret Area 51 video, that the ship fell to pieces and all those pieces come together and form a ship. But what I didn't realize at that point that he could use anything to form the ship, you know?
Well, I think those cubes weren't the ship as much as like memory units that can manipulate metal to turn into what it needs to turn into.
Yeah, some kind of weird technology. And I will say, what was cool is before, you know how I talked about ignoring all spoilers and everything about this movie? Seeing just the poster is the kid standing in silhouette in a field, I guess, and the water tower in the distance. And I thought of, like, as a kid, like War of the Worlds and stuff, you almost think of water towers like an alien craft, you know? That's a Martian tripod from War of the Worlds. I always saw that. So I think it's cool on the poster. It's just a water tower. And so when you're at this point in the movie, you're like, holy shit, that's below the water tower. So when you see it on the movie poster now, they're like there. And that's the alien right there where he lives underneath there.
Yeah, underneath.
I thought that was just cool how they did that.
They kind of hinted to it in the scene when the cube flew through the wall and
flies
just
right
shot the water tower through the hole.
Right. The strange electromagnetic power it has. Somehow it's attracting those cubes. It's cool how Carrie causes the distraction, but you're worried that he won't get out of there, you know?
Yeah.
And I love that he saves Alice and he wakes her up, but then the lady with curlers you heard about, like a woman in curlers, you know, my wife was abducted. She was in curlers. He doesn't say she was abducted. My wife just disappeared. She was just in her curlers, whatever. So when you see her and she's like, where am I? You've heard about her.
And she's just yakking and yakking and yakking.
And I love when they wake up the sheriff, he's just as inept as he was when he was abducted. Oh. Come with me. Follow I know me. The way. And then
we just came that way.
And the creature does that scary shit where he just grabs you real quick. And I still wonder if he killed the sheriff or he just threw him aside or something. I don't know. You like to
well,
think
I don't think he really had time to eat him, so
he
just threw him aside.
Right. And as he's going after, and then he corners the kids. And I thought this is interesting when he grabs Joe, and Joe, remember what he says?
I know bad things happen. Bad things happen. But you can still live. You can still live.
Yeah, it's bad things happen.
Yeah, basically saying, you know, I almost thought of it as a way is like, we're not all bad. Bad shit happens. Get over it and go home. You don't have to kill us.
Yeah, he says bad things happen, but you can live.
Yeah, just go. You know, don't hurt us. We're not here to fuck with you. You know, we're not here to mess with you. We're not here to hurt you. Just let us be. And he's just like, okay.
Oh, no. Let me make some big breathing sounds and look at you with my double eye thing.
No, that was cool because he went from mean looking to more friendly looking, you know.
Kind of sad.
He took down his defenses, you know, and kind of looked at him. And then that's when his machine comes on finally. Like, I realized up to that point it's going, he's revving
it.
Yeah,
trying to start.
Yeah, and when it comes on, he's like, okay, I'm out of here. And that's when, you know, they get out of there. I really like the scenes of the whole town getting sucked up magnetically, you know?
Yeah.
And then the being reunited with his dad, and his dad has come to respect him, and, you know, he realized that he needs him, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I almost started crying whenever they see one another, and he grabs him and just says, I got you.
Right.
I got you.
That stuff was good. That's good shit right there.
I don't understand why anybody has a problem with the last 30 minutes of the film. I thought it was incredibly exciting, well-paced.
Well, I think people have a problem with the fact that the creature was eating people and he gets away. I think people wanted him either destroyed or somehow explained. But I was coming to grips with that and the fact that they kept him... He was a lab rat and they fed him nothing but beef, like cow parts.
So yeah, I totally agree.
So basically, think about this. Okay, there's one side, there's the human story of Joe and his friends, but also the alien story of he's escaped from jail. He's trying to build a craft to get home, and he's hungry for meat because that's all he's been fed for the last 100 years or whatever. However long he's been in captivity, I don't know how long he's... So he's,
30 years? I think it was 1958, they said in the film.
So he's trying to... I think he's trying to avoid people, but when they're in his way, he's like, I'm hungry, and he grabs them, you know?
Yeah.
I think it sucks what they did to the creature, but I don't sympathize with them. I don't feel bad for him. I think he's scary, and I want him to get the hell off the planet, right?
Yeah, get out of there. There's no use here.
I just don't want him to go home and go, you'll never guess what they did to me. Let's go back and kick their asses. Then we're kind of screwed, aren't we? like 2,000 ships arrive.
It's going to be District 10.
Maybe, like, he returns, but he's friendly. Yeah. No,
with the Care Bears and their cloud cars.
So what did J.J. Abrams do here? He gave us a touching human story, but he scared the shit out of us with an alien, too.
Yeah.
Right? When the movie was over, you think it's over, Bill. But no, the best part of the movie happens at the end. We get to see their zombie film put together during the credits. I laughed my ass off at all of that. I loved the zombie film. What was it called again?
The Case.
The Case. Oh, my God. The theater. Because by now, we know these kids. We love these kids. And we've seen all the scenes they've been filming. So we get to see it put together. That's the best part of the movie, honestly. That is awesome. Like Easter egg that, hey, you guys now get to watch the movie they put together. And it was awesome. I was laughing my ass off.
Carrie got killed, I think, 3 times.
Yeah, he's the zombie in every scene. I love when he's like, excuse me, sir. And he turns around. Blah. But I love when he goes and he talks to the president of the whatever company they're at, the factory. And he's like,
Romero Chemical.
Yeah. I love when he's like, I'm going to investigate this. And he leaves and he just picks up the phone and he goes, he knows. This is all the dialogue was great. And when he's telling his wife, I'm telling you, you've got to go to Michigan. You know, it's not safe here.
Yeah, because they have the train in her shot and no train in his shot.
But I love that that's like, you got to get out of here. And he's like, I really love her. He delivers a line that's so hilarious when he's like, I really love her so much. Like just thinking out loud. But
I was cracking up at the last scene whenever she attacks him in the hallway and he has that massive hypodermic needle filled with the green goo. And at one point the needle's on it. And then whenever he goes to stab her with it, the needle's not on it anymore and there's nothing in it.
Yeah.
It's just all those little touches that made me laugh.
Great, like student film or whatever. And these are just high school kids. He's going to be a great filmmaker one day.
Yeah, as he obviously thinks by his little ending there in the smoking jacket and pipe.
Yeah, he goes, I'd like you to take this into consideration. And then the last scare with she's a zombie again and attacking him. It was a lot of fun. I thoroughly enjoyed Super 8. I really did.
And it's funny, when it was over, I didn't really enjoy it as much. But talking about it now makes me want to see it again because I've enjoyed talking about it so much.
I wish I could see it with you, Bill. I mean, honestly, the way I feel is I'd like to watch this movie over and over again. And
there's certain movies where you have to be in the right mindset to really enjoy something. And I think I just wasn't in that mindset for Super 8.
I mean, you've seen it the first time. You know what to expect now. You just sit and enjoy it. I mean,
yeah, because I went into it not knowing anything. I totally blacked out on everything about Super 8. didn't want to know anything.
And that's
and
where
I
comes
went
to...
into it not knowing anything, not expecting anything, and you would think that would help me appreciate it, but it, I think it actually just confused the situation.
Right, it did somewhat, because the creature was very confusing, because during this movie I was like, where does this thing fit into the story? What does it want? What is it doing? And then, you know, as I figured out, it's just trying to go home. And he really doesn't want to have anything to do with Joe or his friends. There's not going to be any kind of E.T. Like, I've seen, like, hey, it's kind of like E.T. It's not like E.T. No. Maybe that there's kids in it, but...
E.T. never ate anyone.
E.T. never was gnawing on a foot in a scene, no. Okay? You know? This is, like, the thing in this town. You know, a creature that will kill if you get in its way, or it'll take you and store you for food provisions later. And I was thinking about that. Why didn't he eat her yet? And then I thought about it. He needed food for space travel. I bet he's going to take those bodies in the ship with him.
Oh, there you go.
And then when you see him crawling outside the ship at the end, and everyone's like, holy shit, as he's getting in the thing, he's like, I don't have any food, as he takes off.
I got to get out of here.
It's like, ah, shit. And then, you know, what happens is he gets frozen in space in a meteor, a comet. Later on, it falls to Earth. Cloverfield, Bill. Hello. Now, some people are like, is this a prequel to Cloverfield? It's like, no, it's not. And another complaint. Can I just – I want to talk about our bullet points, Bill, our favorite moments in the movie.
Hail the bullets!
But I got to talk about my bitching points of people who I see complain about this. Number one,
hail,
Bill.
Your hail of bitches?
Son of a bitch!
Right. Here it is, Bill. Well, what the hell was a Super 8? Was that the creature's name?
Or was it the kids? Because there was eight of them?
Holy shit.
I've heard that. I've honestly heard it. And yeah. I don't think there was eight kids.
There weren't. Are you including the dads?
I don't know why they would ever... Eight of them did something super?
I was like, Super 8 is the film. They're making a movie. The Super 8 camera.
I guess you can't blame people for being completely uninformed. I mean, but it's still moronic.
Well, people wanted the creature explained more. That's not... I mean, I don't know
why...
The
movie wasn't about the creature. It was about the kids.
You don't need everything explained. It's the same thing as, like, okay, Kyle Chandler. He doesn't need to talk about all of his feelings. He tells you with his face.
Yeah.
He tells you with his expressions. The movie... doesn't need to... Hopefully it doesn't. If you need the movie to take you aside and sit you down and explain everything, just go watch a kid's show or something. Go watch Bernstein Bears or something. Because seriously, this movie's not for you. That's all I got to say about it. I mean,
you need to be taken by the hand.
This is what I know. The alien crashed here. What was he doing here? I don't know. But the military, they wanted his ass. And they poked and prodded and studied him and made him into a mean animal, which, when he grabbed the doctor, was a plea for help. Like, this is what I'm doing here. Can you please get me out of here? I think the doctor left there in disgust, went on with his life, still kept tabs on the place, found out they were transporting the creature. I don't know if it's telepathically or for a friend he used to know there. He derailed the train, like, really dramatically, by the way. And to help the creature escape. That was the creature's last chance to get the hell out of here because he just felt it was right. That's what I think it was.
That is what it was, at least I think.
And that's what we all put together from the clues we're given in the movie. They don't have to tell us everything. J.J. Abrams, he loves the mystery box. But he keeps some mystery, and I don't think it was that mysterious at the end. Like, they didn't explain this. Did you?
No, not at all. Every question was answered for me. There was at no point did I wonder what planet the alien was from.
I wonder what the planet's called. Why won't he explain that to me?
My name is Darth Vader. I am an extraterrestrial from the planet Vulcan.
Or how the ship made itself, or why it exploded the water tower.
That was cool, and the raining
mist. I
kind
of knew why. It used the metal that it was...
Yeah, and it got sucked in. It imploded. So, Bill, my favorite parts of the movie... I already talked about the film, the case.
Yeah.
The dynamic of the kids, loved all that. And the scene, you know, certain scenes, like, had all my favorite moments in the film had to do with Joe and Alice in a lot of ways. The zombie part where she's showing him her zombie and he falls in love with her right then and there, if he wasn't already. The scene where they're watching the his mom on the film.
Mm-hmm.
Great parts. There's other parts. I need to watch the movie again just to remember some of the funniest scenes, but because they're all great, you know, the vomiting and stuff like that. But all I'd say is whenever I like a movie a lot, I get rather defensive about it. And anyone's allowed to have their opinion. If you didn't like it, that's fine. But when people complain that they don't know what Super 8 is, it drives me crazy. You're like, holy shit. Are you serious? You know? But I really loved it. I think when Emma's a little older, I'll show it to her. I think the part where Alice is abducted, she would have been inconsolable.
She probably needs to be about the same age as the kids in the movie, like 13. Right.
Like if when Alice, because she always identifies with the female character in a movie. When Alice is abducted, she would, you know, be like, okay, she's going to be okay. Trust me, she's still alive. God damn you,
J.J.
Abrams.
Why did I do this?
J.J. Abrams, if she's not alive, I'll kill you.
Oh, my God.
Holy crap. You know, but luckily that was... I really love J.J. Abrams. I think when you see a movie and you know the guy just loves movies and he loves what he's doing and you feel that enthusiasm, it means a lot to me. Other than, like, he's just, you know, throwing a movie out there. Like, this... When I was thinking about Star Trek, Bill. J.J. Abrams' Star Trek. I like the movie. I enjoyed it, but at the same time, I don't have a desire to own it or watch it over and over again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want to watch Super 8 over and over again because it felt like a personal story.
And again, Star Trek really wasn't a personal story. It was Paramount going, we need to make a new Star Trek. We need to get a geeky director that has that connection to the Geekiverse on the internet. And it was a more calculated film than Super 8.
We need to make Star Trek cool.
Yeah.
And so it alienated Star Trek fans while introducing it to a younger generation where everything's badass, I guess. And another thing is lens flare in the movie. Because people bitch about lens flare, Bill. I notice it now. And I don't think I would have otherwise. And it's not bothersome in the movie. So people, if you're not going to see Super 8 because of lens flare, relax. You shouldn't be listening to this anyway because, spoiler alert, okay? We just ruined the whole movie.
It was all about lens flare.
Yeah. Does the lens flare bother you? It doesn't bother me.
Not at all. In fact, there were a couple moments where it was really appropriate, especially at the end whenever the ship was taking off and traveling up and through the atmosphere, and there was just this white band of lens flare on top of it.
If you watch the end of Close Encounters, there's a lot of lens flare.
Yeah, there's a ton of lens flare in Close Encounters.
There's a ton of lens flare in... Spielberg movies, period. And a lot of movies of the time.
Private Ryan's got a lot of lens flare.
Lens flare is awesome. Hey, at least it's not shaky cam and you're puking up like Martin is through the whole movie, right?
Yeah, I don't think Paul Greengrass uses lens flare.
You know, Bill,
just confuse people and give them seizures.
I read one review that said, this is the most cliched movie I've ever seen. If I see that kid throw up one more time in this movie... Unbelievable. And I was like, what? Is there... What? He throws up... It's hinted that he pukes a lot.
Yeah.
He throws up at the beginning, after the train, and it's funny. And then later on, the projectile, that was hilarious. So I don't know why this person's... It just seems like people want to just take a big dump on it, you know?
But it's such a huge character trait for that one character... That he's the leading man, yet he's got the nervous tummy.
Yeah, and he is that Gabriel Basso, I believe is his name. He is so good in that role. He just looking at him makes me laugh.
And he made me think of the kid that plays Bill in Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah, Bill Haverchuck.
French kissing is gross. I wouldn't French kiss in a million years. Hello, germs. Spit, mucus, old bits of food. That's just to name a couple. There's a lot of things in there. What are you supposed to do? Lick the inside of her mouth? Are you supposed to lick her teeth? Do you make your tongue hard or soft?
God, Bill, enough.
What if she puts her tongue too far into my mouth? What if I throw up? What if I throw up all over? What if I throw up in her mouth?
Oh, shut up, Bill! That's disgusting!
Sorry.
Yeah, he just had that look about him when he's supposed to be an adult in the suit and he just looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
I love that. I love the case at the end of Super 8. There's just so much I love about the movie, and we'll talk about it more, I'm sure, as it comes out on Blu-ray and stuff. But
I think my love will probably grow for it. You know, Right now I'm just kind of, I need to see it again.
Right. I can understand when I was talking about viral marketing and how things will tend to raise your expectations. And you know, in this case, I wasn't sure what to expect, but I liked what I saw. You know, I liked what it was, that it was this kind of, the story it turned out to be, I appreciated it, you know?
Sure.
And, you know, I'm not really real geeky about monsters and stuff, so some people like Cloverfield, it's not iconic enough. It's like, I don't know what to tell you there. Like, holy shit, I don't know what to tell you there. But that is my take on Super 8, Bill. Do you have anything to add, any kind of bullet points or anything?
No, I really loved the kids. I thought the emotional scenes worked incredibly well. Any of the scenes with Kyle Chandler, gotta love Coach.
I love the use of Giacchino's score. I loved it.
Oh, and especially at the end. That I don't know what – we won't know the stuff until the 28th whenever the album's finally released. But that – music over the end whenever the ship's going up and everyone's together holding on to one another, it was just really, it just pitch perfect.
Beautiful. Yeah, and my dad, you know, I saw the movie with him, and that was the second time in seeing it that weekend, and he said, very John Williamsy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I guess, you know, that final crescendo, I don't know if that's the right word, but of the E.T. score as he rises up into space. But instead, this alien, he's like flipping off Earth as he flies away, I think.
Yeah, he's angry.
He's like, go
ahead.
Look
at the ship. That was an angry looking ship.
Yeah, that thing meant business. He was making an escape.
Yeah. And you know, the way he got into the ship looked like he was making an escape.
If you think about it, in E.T., if the military would have gotten a hold of E.T. and cut to 10 years later, E.T.'s pissed off. Because they've been shoving things up his ass. They've been poking
checking
and prodding
his
him.
His alien prostate.
Yeah, so by the time E.T. gets out and he does that real fast, through the woods, that would scare the shit out of you, wouldn't it? When E.T. would do that, that shit was scary, man.
That wrinkly, pot-bellied little shit.
Just picture you're in the woods, you hear something, and you flash a light at E.T., and he comes barreling at you, making that sound. You would shit your pants.
I think I would. It would probably look a lot like E.T.
I just figured it out. Super 8 is what happened to E.T. when he was captured by the military. In fact, when they got the alien creature, there was a other set of kids, and they're all dead. The military killed them. It's really sad.
They shot him down out of the sky whenever they were on their bikes.
On their bikes, they're like...
That's why Spielberg had to edit out the guns and put walkie-talkies into E.T.
There was a flaming Kuwahara falling to Earth. That's the director's cut there. It's like, actually, there's a more violent director's cut, but I don't want you guys to see that.
This is the one where all the children die.
So I'm really excited to see what J.J. does next. If it's Star Trek 2, I'm a little underwhelmed. You know, I'm sure I'll go see it. But I want more original J.J. Abrams projects, you know?
It's going to be a while for Star Trek 2 because he said that he was about 6 months behind schedule.
Oh, okay.
So they're probably going to end up delaying it another year or so.
Yeah, I'm in no hurry. I don't care.
I really, you know, Star Trek is fine and all, but... I'm just not really that big of a fan.
I'm more excited about something like this where people try to make something that's more original into like, same old shit you've seen before, but I don't think it is. I think it's more of a love letter to his childhood and his movie-going experience. This is the kind of summer movie we've yearned for, and you get it, and you're not sure what to do with it. I think
that's a really good explanation of it, because after I saw it, I really didn't know what to do with it. I was like, oh, okay, well, we'll see.
That's why we'll do a Super 8 Revisited when it comes out on Blu-ray.
I think that's a good idea.
We'll talk about the Blu-ray and we'll talk about
hopefully
what
maybe there will be some deleted scenes.
And one thing is, I kind of wanted to do our Super 8 show right after we saw it, but it's almost good that it's been a week, you know?
And it lets think it about stew it. In your mind.
Yeah, I walked around and thought about scenes. I thought about the alien a lot and what his motivation was.
I'm still not huge on the creature design. That's my main hang-up on it. Neville Page needs to take a break with the creature design.
Maybe J.J. Abrams needs to just hire somebody else.
I think there's a certain amount of loyalty, but it's just... Maybe because I wasn't expecting multi-armed, kind of almost Geiger-ish...
If you watch the Super 8 commentary and J.J. says it intentionally looks like Cloverfield because of this reason or whatever, that'll be much better, don't you think?
Absolutely.
That he did it on purpose?
I can go along with that.
Because that's how I explained it to myself.
He's trying to build it all in the same universe, create like a mythology, I can get on board.
But it's something because J.J. is so mysterious about stuff, he never outright explains it. That's what I think. He wants people to think this, but he's not ever going to say it because you just don't the magician doesn't reveal his tricks because, you know, he's obsessed with magic and all that stuff.
The mystery box.
It's just that, you know, when I think about it and I start thinking about, the monkeys that, Neville Page did for Avatar with the four arms and...
He loves the forearm thing.
Yeah, I just wish he would. Neville Page needs to take a look at his work and go, wow, this is all starting to look the same.
He designed the creature on the ice planet in Star Trek, too, that looked like a version
creature
of Cloverfield.
In Cloverfield and in.
It was kind of Cloverfield-ish, but it had a different kind of head. The head in this movie looks a lot like Cloverfield to me, like this bat face, you know?
Yeah, the hole for the nose and the way it almost had mandibles at the bottom that kind of separated.
Right. And it's almost like the way I thought they revealed in the film is that he had a defensive cover for his eyes. And then when Joe is communicating with him, he takes the defensive layer off where he just sees his real pupils there. And he's like, oh, it's just a scared little animal. Well, too bad he's about to bite Joe's head off.
Delicious. The creature in Star Trek had that too.
Yeah, I bet the same guy designed it.
Yeah, it was. It's all Neville Page. Avatar, Tron, Star Trek, Cloverfield.
Well, Bill, that's our discussion of Super 8. I think we're winding down, right?
Yeah, I think we're done.
I hope you guys enjoyed this. If you'd like to talk more about Super 8, find our forum, nimforum.com, and find the thread titled New Movie Mini Super 8, although I think this was a maxi, wasn't it? Go to nowhereinmulberry.com. You can find a link to our forum there. Also, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Also, send us an email at nimpodcast@gmail.com, or we'd love to have a voicemail from you at 1206-202-3491. Talk about Super 8. Tell us what you thought. Hey, if you didn't like it, that's fine. Tell us why. Tell us why you loved it. Tell us what you had problems with and that kind of thing.
Tell us if you have irritable bowel syndrome. We'll talk about it.
The one thing I want, Bill, is just a discussion. Come on, discuss what we talked about. We want to talk about it.
That's really kind of what it's all about. That's really, I think it comes down to what we do at Nowhere in Mulberry, what we do with this show. Creating a friendship, a social network, if you will.
Yeah, we want to keep the discussion going on Super 8.
And join the forum. Join the forum. If you haven't joined the forum, do it now.
Right. We'd love it. All right, guys. That was Super 8. And see you on the next movie, Bill. What will it be? Will it be Green Lantern? We'll see.
Bye.
See you next time, guys. Bye.
Sharona!
Drugs are so bad!
Now this is podcasting!